Thank you for joining us for ILTA's Summer 2015 Ask the Expert podcast series. We're discussing Law 2020, ILTA's initiative that focuses on ways in which law firms will have to adapt in order to thrive into the future, and business and process improvements. We're tying those together today. I'm Christy Cole with ILTA, and I'm here with Ted Theodoropoulos. He's the president of AcroWire, and welcome to today's Ask the Expert.
Thanks for having me.
Well, I'd like to start with, what are the benefits of making improvements to business and legal processes?
First of all, I think we should kind of start and look where things are today. Obviously, the time and materials model is the prevalent way in which lawyers bill clients. And in that model, really what's being billed for is input rather than output. Obviously, there are deliverables as part of the legal process, and the market was very comfortable, I think, with time and materials model prior to the most recent recession. But we're seeing more and more firms that have GCs demanding AFAs and really asking law firms to demonstrate their commitment to efficiency. And even when, you know, GCs aren't asking for it, we're also seeing marketing departments that are highlighting their commitment to efficiency as a way to differentiate themselves. You know, back to the AFA scenario, that's really a play for GCs to create some predictability around their costs. And from the law firm side, they need to deliver some predictability around the cost to deliver the legal work. And, you know, the best way to create that predictability is to define and make consistent underlying processes. So the hourly model, again, it's worked great for a number of years, but there are inherent challenges with that model, one of which is there's a penalty that law firms receive when they're too efficient in that scenario. You know, the faster I get my work done, the less revenue I bring in the door. And that dynamic really kind of puts firms and clients' interests at odds a bit. You know, I think that's something that the market is really starting to recognize and put pressure on firms for AFAs, and it's really going to drive adoption of BPI, business process improvement, within legal. There was a management consultant, Edward Stemming. He's been gone for a while now. You know, he once said that if you can't describe what you're doing as a process, you don't know what you're doing. And I really believe that to be true, and it's widely accepted in most industries. So I really do think that firms would benefit from adopting that mantra and incorporating it into the DNA of their business.
Well, this is diving in just a little bit deeper, but how do you determine whether your process can be better improved with a people change versus a technology change?
You know, I really don't see that as being mutually exclusive. You know, I think if we take a step back a minute and look at the bigger picture rather than an individual process, there's a significant amount of people and technology change that is required when a firm heads down this road. So step one in a firm-wide effort to adopt BPI is getting buy-in at the executive level and an understanding that process changes are necessary to stay competitive. And step two is really getting leaders to show commitment to BPI. And that can take the form of having key folks in leadership positions getting certified, having explicit communications with the rest of the firm regarding that initiative, showing commitment through allocating necessary budget, structuring incentives around compliance, and then even publicly recognizing excellence when it happens in that realm. So all those activities are kind of people-centric. Once the people at the firm have been aligned in this way, then we can start to talk about individual processes and potential automation opportunities. But, you know, I'm a Lean Six Sigma black belt and understand that methodology and framework well. And there are numerous tools within Lean and Six Sigma that help identify opportunities to eliminate waste and reduce errors. My favorite tools is called the FMEA, which I've written about for ILTA before. The FMEA, essentially, it stands for Failure Modes and Effects Analysis, and it evaluates every step in a process for potential error conditions called failure modes. And then those failure modes are risk rank, and those with the highest risk get addressed first. And sometimes that risk is mitigated through people changes. That could be the creation of a new role. It could be training. It could be segregation of duties. You know, sometimes that risk is mitigated through technology, either automation or implementation of technical controls to better correct for error conditions. So I would say The short answer is leverage the tools within an existing framework to kind of help guide you in the appropriate direction.
Great. And thinking about today, what everyone is trying to accomplish with their improvements, what should firms and legal departments implement now in terms of process improvements?
I think, there's obvious candidates, which most firms are already kind of heading down that path, and new matter intake and conflicts checking and so forth. But, more broadly than the blatantly obvious, I would say there are processes a lot of times that are cross-cutting, like new matter intake. Doesn't matter what practice area you're in, when a new matter is referred, certain events need to happen. There are processes like this that are repeated thousands of times a month at law firms, and they're usually easily identified and relatively well understood. I would say pick that low-hanging fruit first. Those are usually highly repetitive processes, and they're good candidates to divide up the responsibilities across different labor tiers, and that can provide an immediate and measurable cost savings. And one somewhat less tangible benefit of doing this is pushing those more routine tasks down to lower cost resources, or even outsourcing them altogether, can really improve associate satisfaction. Attorneys spent a significant amount of time and money going to law school and passing the bar, and they typically don't enjoy spending time performing routine tasks. So look for those highly repetitive processes that can be segmented out, and you'll get some immediate wins on the board that way.
Well, you've kind of covered quite a bit already here, but if you were going to give one piece of advice to someone embarking on a long-term process improvement initiative, what would that be?
I think the key words that you use there is long-term. And, in any long-term endeavor, it's always good to have a solid starting point. We talked about a few ways to kind of figure out where to start in the last question, but there are practice areas within law firms, where producing work product just inherently requires deeper subject matter expertise and creativity. M&A is a good example. No two mergers are exactly the same. There are other practice areas where work requires more procedure than it does strategy. Default services is a good example of that. Sometimes intellectual property, filing patents, immigration. Start in areas of the business with the most opportunity and get some quick wins on the board, and leverage an existing discipline like Lean Six Sigma. And the benefit there is with Lean Six Sigma, you're always going to do a baseline. So you're going to measure how a process performs before and after you've gone about the business of reengineering it. And that will really give you ammunition that you need to generate that senior level buy-in, which is going to help you move the BPI initiative across the rest of the business. I can't emphasize enough how important having buy-in at that leadership level is going to be to get the other necessary stakeholders to the table. I think there's a natural tendency, and I've seen it not just at law firms, but in other businesses where, there's key influencers within the business, and the person responsible for kicking off a Six Sigma engagement within the firm tends to gravitate to where they think they can get the most advocacy. I would caution folks against that. That's not the most important thing. The most important thing is that you can demonstrate that it works. And once you're able to do that, life becomes much easier, knocking down other walls into different silos of the business.
Let's look to the future now. Imagine the modern law firm in the year 2020. We're going through all of these process improvements. Now we're past that. We're to 2040. Tell me what that looks like.
2040. So that's 25 years. That's a really long way away. But
it is.
It's hard to talk about the future of law without bringing up Richard Susskind and incorporating some of his ideas into the conversation. So I recently read Tomorrow's Lawyers from Susskind, and he talks about three main drivers of change. He talks about the more for less challenge, which, essentially is where rising regulatory pressures on businesses and declining legal budgets create this market scenario where firms who embrace efficiency get rewarded. He also talks about liberalization, which is a relaxation of the laws and regulations that govern who can perform legal work. So certain categories of legal services will be done by non-lawyers in the future. And he cites in the UK there's an alternative business structure format that's been created that allows non-lawyers to essentially start legal services types business. And that's going to be a big influencer on what happens going forward. And then finally, the third driver of change is really information technology. And I think this one is probably the most difficult for attorneys to grasp, but any attorney who doubts that IT is going to have a major impact in legal should watch the Jeopardy series where Watson beats the brightest minds the show's ever had. There's no doubt that IT is going to be a big influencer. So if you look at all those three drivers of change, more for less, liberalization, and IT, I think that you can picture a scenario where business is going to be done very differently. And I think alternative business structures are already being validated. I think LegalZoom's a good example of that. There's going to be more of that as we go forward. And these alternative business structures aren't going to have that limiting mindset that a lot of law firms have, where they think that this is a profession and not a business. There are strong analogs for this liberalization in other industries. I mean, look at medicine, for example. Today we've got minute clinics and 24-hour urgent care. There's even medical care being delivered via Skype. So there's going to be a tremendous amount of change there. To give some kind of concrete examples, I think that big data is going to have a role in shaping the industry. If you look at today's legal services, they're very reactive. For the most part, customers of law firms engage on some trigger event that happens in their world. They need a patent filed or they need to defend an employment dispute. I could see a day where firms use technology and their legal expertise, of course, and try and manage legal risks proactively, either specific legal issues or maybe it's their compliance issues. Maybe law firms develop systems to, monitor a client's electronic communication and look for keywords and phrases that potentially point to a compliance event. I think law firms could really uniquely position themselves in that sense and provide a service that focuses on a specific industry or set of regulations that change frequently or that are up for interpretation, by the regulators. Those are really difficult waters for businesses to navigate. So, yeah, I see firms becoming very different in how they go about new business generation. Instead of waiting to pick up the phone or taking people to lunch in order to generate business, I see IT as a mechanism through which law firms can ultimately transform how they go about doing their business development.
Well, you've actually raised a ton more questions in my head, but we'll have to address those another time. Very interesting stuff. So we have to go ahead and wrap this up. I want to thank our listeners. Please join us next time and check out Ilta's other podcast recordings. And Ted, it's been a pleasure speaking with you. We really appreciate you sharing your insight.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.